Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So, Stephen O'Donnell is with us in studio, one of the key figures in Dundalk's recent dominance of the League of Ireland, forced into early retirement at the age of just 32. Soon to be 33, though.
I'm 33 next week, yeah.
Thanks for coming in.
No problem.
So, 6 League of Ireland titles, 4 of them over the past 5 years with Dundalk, 4 FAI Cups, 3. 4 medals, 3?
3 FAI Cups, yeah.
Done your research there, Nate.
Brilliantly, brilliantly well. Do you get a medal for this year?
I'll take
Do you get a medal for this year?
I'll take a medal, yeah.
Did you get a medal?
No, the grandchildren won't know in 40 odd years.
Slow down, you're only married, like.
Yeah.
Wow. A couple of League Cups, represented Ireland underage level all the way up to under 21s, played for 23s.
Yeah, the League of Ireland 23s, League of Ireland Select, I think it was.
You did all right.
Done grand, yeah. Could have been better, but done all right. No real regrets.
You missed out on pretty much all of last season in the end. Broke your leg against Waterford back in May. Was it the last game of the season you got on?
Yeah, I got played against Bowes last game of the season. Kind of my goal was to try and maybe outside chance getting back for the cup final if we kept progressing in the cup final. So
didn't make the squad for the cup
final. Didn't make the squad, no. So obviously, Bowes' performance wasn't too hot, but just happy basically to the way it's ended now, end out in the pitch, you know, instead of sort of bowing out without getting back on the pitch after breaking the leg. So I'm happy enough that
so
I got on the pitch.
After getting back, why are you retiring?
Just a culmination of a lot of things. I think obviously the body's taking a bit of a bashing, and I just felt sort of in my head last year, and I just felt now in the off season that I felt as if the time is right. I've heard people say before, when you know, you know, and I was happy enough.
You'll say you're 33 next week, so like body going well, you could have had another 2 or 3 years, particularly the level you were playing at. Even before the injury, a lot of seasoned League of Ireland watchers would say the most technically gifted player in the league, the best player in the league. To go from that a year ago to deciding to hang it all
up. Yeah, well,
so you don't need to move that much in the game, like, so you weren't maybe that reliant on young legs maybe?
No, yeah, I suppose even the year before I probably didn't have a stellar season with a lot of injuries and that as well. Probably since the European run, the next 2 seasons wasn't happy with injury-wise, and I just didn't want to be hanging around the place and playing to a level that you know, I wasn't happy with. And I thought just being the captain and that, I think your captain's got to be sort of a leader and playing to a very high level. And I just didn't know if I was capable of that anymore, I suppose. And I didn't know, you know, how much I could go to the well again and get myself put in the effort to get back up to the level I needed to play at. And to be honest, I probably couldn't see myself going through the season injury-free. And
had you lost the love of it?
No, I hadn't lost the love of it. It's just, I suppose, the injuries do sort of keep chipping away at you, and you come back from
what, 2-3 bad injuries over the last...
Yeah, well, all in all, I've had around 7 or 8 knee operations, leg operations, so... I think I could have played to a level, kept playing to a level, but it's what level you play at, and I just felt the time was right. It's sort of been in my head the last 6 or 7 months, and you know, an opportunity kind of arose to stay involved with Dundalk on another level, going to the other side of the fence, I suppose, and I felt that was the right decision to make.
Is there a psychological kind of, I suppose, you reach a level where you've been out for so long and you've had so much time to think about this that you're kind of like, over time, it's like, I just don't want to go through this again, that I don't want to go through another long-term injury where I'm in the same position again, and it's just like, how has this happened to me again, and I have to lift myself, and maybe you didn't want the danger of that happening again?
Yeah, there's that too, and it was just, I don't know how I put it. I was coming back from injuries, and you know, it takes a few weeks to get into a rhythm, you know, sort of, as I call it, when you're playing. Sometimes when you're in a rhythm, you're kind of on autopilot. You don't have to think about things during a game. It's just happening. You're just in a flow. And every time I seemed to be getting back to that point, I'd get injured again and have to start from scratch. So pretty much, there was going to come a time, the way my body was, it was going to be in the next year or two anyway, I felt that I was going to have to stop playing. And as I said, an opportunity arose, and I've always, like the last few years, I've always wanted, when I stopped playing, to get involved on the other side of it in regards to the management side, and you know, the staff side, and an opportunity arose, and I just felt instead of maybe playing another season and maybe playing 10 or 15 games or whatever and being in the same situation this time next year.
It's interesting, so then, because if Stephen Kenny were still in charge of Dundalk, in theory this wouldn't have arose and you wouldn't have had, you'd have had a different decision to make.
Yes, yeah.
So, and at his wedding, I remember Stephen Kenny got the Ireland job the following day and all the Dundalk lads didn't know that this was happening, and it was...
Was Stephen Kenny invited to your wedding?
Yeah, he was coming, he had the hotel booked and that, and then he pulled out because it wasn't actually anything got to do with the Ireland gig. He pulled out because there was something in regards to a family matter or whatever that he couldn't get out of, and then luckily enough he didn't come down to the wedding because he was summoned somewhere else, and the rest is history, I suppose.
The final decision then, we've spoke to so many people who retired, and you go from one extreme to, say, someone like Stephen Reid, who made the decision, I think, in a Aldi car park and finds himself sitting in his car in tears after similar having so many injury problems. But still, even though he hated the battle back and the physio and all of that, still just didn't want to give it up. Like, you've been a professional footballer since, what, 15 when you went to Arsenal? And really, probably since you were so good when you were 10, 11, 12, you probably even in your head then had it that you could go on and be a professional footballer. That final moment over the last few weeks when you're actually making that decision, what was that like?
There was no one moment where I said, this is it, that's it, done. You know, I'm not really, I wouldn't be sort of the most sentimental or that. So in my own head, it was kind of done a good while ago. So in my own head, what I wanted to happen. And so there's probably been no moment, maybe now when the season starts or there'll be a particular game or, you know, that the lads are playing, and then that I'd say I wish I was there. But on the other hand, I'm probably kind of used to now sitting from the stands and watching the game. So there hasn't been any sort of specific moment where I've gone, that's it, you know. Maybe
has it sunk in though? Like,
you know, I'm sort of not bad like that. I don't think there will be a moment where it'll hit me, you know, and as Stephen Reid or whatever, you know, and in tears or that. It hasn't been anything like that. I'm more sort of excited to the looking ahead and getting involved in my role now at Dundalk rather than sort of thinking. But I think the thing I'll miss most maybe is when Europe comes around and the European games. I think I'll miss that. If
why
I know, because I just love playing against them type of teams, better teams, them testing yourself against upper echelon players and just the different style of football, I suppose, as well. And you know, you're going to proper stadiums and playing against proper teams people would recognise and that, and players people would recognise. So it's great pitting yourself against your wits against them type of players. And you know, I know I'll miss that sort of them games more than anything.
When I went through your roll of honour there and the three FAI cups that you won and the six league titles, it's probably not the roll of honour you expected when you went to Arsenal at 15. Like, you can look back on your career as such a success, but when you compare it to your aspirations when you were 15, do you look back at it as a success?
I'm happy with my career, but you know, it's probably, as you said, when you're flying over to London for the first time, whatever, after signing for Arsenal, you wouldn't be thinking League of Ireland maybe. But I was well in tune with the League of Ireland from going to Galway United matches and that as a kid. But, you know, there's a lot of things in my career that I could have done a hell of a lot better. You know, the penny didn't drop at me till...
It was too late.
Till very late on. Don't know if I was a horse, the penny wouldn't have dropped till I was a 6 or 7 year old. But
That's on the flat, yeah.
So,
well, what was your Arsenal team like at that time then? Fabregas was there.
Seb Larson was there.
This is under 17, is this?
Yeah, Fabregas was a bit younger, but he would have played obviously a little bit up when he first came, and then he was basically fast tracked. I think he was nearly a regular at Arsenal when he was 17 or...
And where were you? So say you're in those underage teams with Cesc Fabregas, who even at that stage, I think everyone knows, is this talent that's going to go on and do what he's done and play 500 games in England and win everything there is to win in world football. Where are you in comparison to him at that stage?
Oh, look, it'd be silly of me to say I was right up there. No, yeah, but
you're playing on the same level.
Captain in his team, weren't you?
Yeah, I was captain for a spell. When I went over there as well, I was sort of, because I was a lefty, I was sort of played on the left wing because there was no other lefties. So I think anyone watching me now would say that left wing wouldn't be a great position. But Arsenal kind of didn't play out and out wingers. They've sort of you were coming in off the line, so that wasn't ideal to start with. But you know, I was a decent player, I suppose, going over, and I think you're always going over. You hear the stats about like such a small percentage make it, but I think it's only human nature to think that you'll be the one to book the trend and make it. But as I said, look, I didn't give myself the best chance going over, without a doubt, when I was over there.
How do you mean?
In the sense of just maturity, of realising the opportunity you had, and you know, when you see the gym on the left and you can bulk up and get yourself in much better physical condition. I'd like to think now I wouldn't walk by the two doors, which I used to do every day.
And what were you doing?
Just
past those doors.
Yeah, just going home, you know, not doing the extra.
Were you encouraged though? Like,
I suppose strength and conditioning was nowhere near as big then as it is now. I know I'm talking like an old man, but that's.
But the jerseys, even the players were wearing in those days, they were falling off them, you know, in the Premier League, like.
Yeah, and just the food, yes. You know, it was like a 15-year-old boy, I suppose, going from Galway to England. I wouldn't have been great on the nutrition side of it. And just looking back, look, obviously no drinking or that. I was never a big drinker, but just the food, yes. And as I said, gym. Some young boys have the maturity to grasp it, you know, and realise the opportunity you have. I didn't. And even when I came back for the first half of my career in Ireland, I still didn't, you know. It was only when I went to Dundalk, probably, that I said, right, you're either going to make a go of it or not. And then that's when I started probably getting my body in decent shape.
Because I do remember the buzz when you were 12, 13, 14, when you were going to Kennedy Cups. Like, I think everybody, Johnny probably remembers as well, in the west of Ireland, knew about you, had heard about you. You were the next big thing. And you go to Arsenal, like you go to one of the leading clubs in the Premier League. The skill set that you had then and still have now of, like, the technical gifts that you have, the close control, the range of passing, from being this standout talent in the west of Ireland, when you went to Arsenal, like, was that just a given for everybody that was there?
Yeah, that's the way you were coached. I suppose Arsenal only went on and helped that. It's kind of the job of the youth team coaches, and that was kind of to mirror the first team. And sure, when I was there, the first team was one of the teams, obviously, was the Invincibles. Mm. And so it was all very technical in that. And but yeah, I know you'd be able to hold your own technically with them. Obviously, it's totally different levels. Like, you're now competing, instead of competing even in Ireland teams with just players at your age from Ireland, you're now competing not just in Europe. We had Brazilians, you're competing with the whole world. You know, the scouting network for Arsenal obviously was huge, and they're bringing in players from all parts of the world. So that could only improve you. But understanding the game and that Arsenal was great, the game that I think most people would like to play and like to watch, understanding positions and that to take up was, you know, and different things in games, that's what you learn. But as I said, you know, looking back, definitely could have done a lot more myself. Just, I think it wasn't a bad attitude or that it was just immaturity.
You're a fish out of water playing left wing though as well. I didn't realise if you played that much there, because like anyone watching you, even if you were quick, you were never a left winger, really, were you?
No, I was never a left winger, but you know, at that age, now maybe like that might be the only place I could get my position to, in the sense, I forget, like there was midfielders there, but
it's funny because if it were nowadays, wingers are becoming so obsolete almost now that you'd be a lot more suited.
Well,
to
I wasn't
three or
a
four.
Left wing as such, as like hugging the touchline, as I said, I come in off the line and that, but I'm not putting like that. That has nothing really got to do with. You know, I don't think it would have mattered what position I played, you know. With the way my mentality was in that back then, it wouldn't have mattered, you know. But looking back, you know, they were the best days of your life. You know, you're rubbing shoulders and you'd be called over to training sometimes with the training with Henri, Bergkamp, Patrick Vieira, and that's like.
You were on a training pitch with Dennis Bergkamp?
Yeah. Yeah, on the training pitch, Dennis Bergkamp.
The two of you aren't great flyers.
From
around 6 yards away. But I think it was the first time he had the ball and I was near him, and I was just looking at it. Like, I remember thinking, this is Dennis Bergkamp, and, you know, they just rolled it through my legs, and something you were actually quite proud of. You know,
the fear of flying now.
Yeah, not mad in the flying. I'm not as bad as Bergkamp, but yeah, I wouldn't be mad in flying.
Right.
But looking back, as I said, just didn't grasp the opportunity, and the coaches did say, like, you don't realise how lucky you are, but, you know, when you're young, you think.
Yeah. Where did those players go then from that, like, Arsenal's class of whatever that was?
Yeah, like, there was, they're like, As I said with the stats, like a lot of players fall by the wayside, and there was Justin Hoyt was there, not many have gone on. Neil Kilkenny was there. He moved to Birmingham then. He had a bit of a career, played for Leeds, Preston, and I think he's playing out in Australia now.
So for maybe 16 lads, like most of them just fell by the wayside. The vast majority.
Patrick Craig was there. He had his career in Scotland, came back to Ireland. So we lived together. We were kind of, so we're still best friends. Stokesy then came. Anthony Stokes came a year or two later. He was younger again. Nicholas Bentner was there a bit younger, but when they're good lads come in, you know, they play a year or two above. So you would have, they were all.
You wound up playing against Bentner then years later.
Played him, yeah, against Rosenborg. Yeah. I didn't play the first leg and the second leg. I was injured, and then I came on the second leg, and I hadn't sort of been in, you know, contact with him or like near him on the pitch or that, and then we were walking out. He spotted me walking out, and he got a bit of a lad. So he said, "I haven't seen that ugly mug in around 15 years." it's just funny the way it happened.
I think everyone knows the fall off rate in professional football, and particularly for Irish players, but also particularly I think for players from the west of Ireland. Like we've seen now that Ryan Manning has come through, and Greg Cunningham's done very well over there.
Rory Gaffney's done all right.
Aaron Connolly.
Like we can all name, like again, 20, 25 lads who were unbelievably talented who went over, and like it's probably a maturity thing for all of them. It just feels, how can you be mature enough to go from a west of Ireland football setting to playing football for Arsenal in London? Do you think it's impossible?
No, I think players now have a lot more information, even younger players. I think there's more kind of pathways here in Ireland. It's more professional here, schoolboy football in Ireland and that. And I think they have a better grasp of it all now at 15 or 16, you know, when they're going over, I think, than we had. But, you know, it's still a huge, huge culture shock, you know, even living in London compared to Galway, it's massive culture shock.
In Diggs?
In Diggs, yeah, with a family, yeah, so... You know, it was like one big adventure, I suppose, but it still is. Still, like, it's asking a lot of a young person, a 15-year-old, to be going over, you know, but...
That has to change.
As I said, sometimes it's the making of young people to get away from maybe home circumstances in Ireland, that home life mightn't be the best, and to go into a professional environment and, you know, to really sort of grasp it, and it's the making of them. So
it's often the players as well that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Like, the really talented ones often fall by the wayside, but, like, we'll say even Matt Doherty wouldn't have necessarily been expected to go on anywhere near as much as he is. Stephen Ward was a decent League of Ireland player, has had a great career. And I don't know, is it a bit of luck?
I guess two lads who went over a bit older as well.
Yeah, but even the younger kids, like, we all know the stars, like, but most of them don't make it. And I'd say a lot of it is that managers might come and go straight away, then you're suddenly out of favour. And I'd imagine I'd say it's very easy to be homesick as well.
The margins are tiny as well, you know. There's fine margins. As you said, you could be in the right place at the right time, get a little bit of luck.
Matt Doherty was spotted by McCarthy when he was looking at someone else or whatever.
Well, and Wolves played Bowes in the pre-season, like. But it's the boys that stick at, as I said, have the mental fortitude, like, to stick at it and have the maturity of looking at the bigger picture and keep tipping away and improving themselves, you know. And plus, I think if you looked at the Ireland squad, a lot of them that did played League of Ireland, you know. It's a huge difference, because you'd sign a 15-year-old and he could be a totally different specimen come 19-20, like, physically, when it's time to, that's when you want them for the first team, you know. I could be a tall, skinny 15-year-old and then turn out to be a small, stumpy 19-20-year-old,
yeah,
you know. It's just a gamble, and the clubs, it's worth the gamble for the clubs.
Because it costs so little.
Yeah, but the human side of it for a player who's left his education, or for a young kid who's left his education and that, and, you know, It's a massive gamble as a 15-year-old.
You left after your junior cert, did you?
Yeah, I left after my junior. Now, my parents wanted me to do my leaving, but...
You see, Gavin Bazuna
Arsenal
now,
are coming in trying to sign you.
Exactly.
You see
exactly.
Gavin Bazuna now that he can complete his leaving cert and then go to Man City in one of the biggest, highest profile move ever for a League of Ireland player.
Yeah. I think John O'Shea had a whole host, nearly all of Britain want to sign John. He was strong enough to say, "I'm doing my leaving," you know.
You mentioned Ireland there. You have to have a regret that you didn't get that chance, because like you were more than good enough to at least get an Irish cap. And
I can I don't agree.
You end up where you are.
You
know, but you were more than good enough to play for Ireland. I mean,
I can't say. I wouldn't be able to say that.
So even the League of Ireland players who've gone on to play for Ireland, you were inferior to them, or you weren't good enough to at least get a cap.
I don't know.
You play in Europe against Bate, you play against Belgrade, you play against Legia, you play against Zenit, and you're nowhere near out of your depth, yet you couldn't be good enough to get a cap for Ireland.
Yeah, but there's one thing of getting a cap, but there's another thing of like making a difference, you know what I mean? In the sense of...
Why would you not make a difference, though?
I do, all right, but it's all kind of hearsay. I didn't do enough to get a cap, do you know what I mean? I had my chance when I went over as a kid, and when I was,
yeah,
you know,
were 16 or whatever.
I know, but so are a majority of the players that are playing for Ireland now. They've gone and done it. You know what I mean? It's totally different. Most of them are playing Premiership.
You were probably playing your best football when you were getting on a bit.
Yeah,
well.
Exactly.
And you were a professional under Dundalk in your late 20s.
Yeah.
But like when you look at the midfielders, the problem we've had in midfield since Roy Keane, there's nothing to say he wasn't good enough to at least get a look in the squad, in my view.
Well, on that then, so your skill set, and like people compare you to Johnny Giles, and that passing ability, but that style of player, well, your ability.
I wouldn't be a flamboyant. I wouldn't be Johnny. I saw highlights of Johnny Giles, and he could sling a ball with his left and right foot 40, 50 yards on the pitch. I wouldn't have that. I was more of what I'd call a continuity player. I'd be comfortable on the ball, be able to receive it, always sort of make angles and feed then the more attacking lads. But I wouldn't be a big sort of gunslinger slinging it around the pitch, you know. I wouldn't have probably...
But over those years then, say from when you left Arsenal and I think where went Falkirk, then you came back to Ireland for a few years, went through a few different clubs, went to Bowles, went to Galway, Shamrock Rovers, had the cup run... And then you end up with Stephen Kenny. Was it not until you met Stephen Kenny that you found a manager who appreciated your skill set?
No, I had other managers as well. I had a good time with Pat Fenlon. We won the double and that when I first came back to Ireland. But and Michael O'Neill at Rovers. But it was just a case of me. I probably always thought I was in good condition. And then looking back at pictures now of when I say, oh my God, like you're miles away from it. You know, it was just...
And why were you miles away from it? Were you just not taking it seriously?
I just was being lazy and like...
But it wasn't the culture either. The strength condition just wasn't the culture for much of your
career. Yeah, but like, there was other lads in better shape than me, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was just... I just wasn't dedicating my life to it. I just went to Dundalk. I had no offers. I was basically just going to quit playing soccer and...
They were a mess.
So Stephen took over with a blank canvas and he rang me, and I remember I had a moment there when you were talking about in a car. I was after getting FOSS paper forms, so I was after going into Galway to get FOSS forms and just sign up and try and go on. I think like it's just kind of a job seeker, like, and I had a call off Stephen Kenny, and then I remember sitting down after the call in the car as well, and thinking, right, if you're going to do this, like, you're going to give it. Because you're obviously nowhere near as good as you think you are, because you haven't had one phone call so off any other manager.
That was injuries, though. It had to be, because you'd broken your leg at Cork, hadn't you?
Yeah, well, I'd done a damaged my cruciate at Cork, but this was after leaving Rovers. And so I pretty much said to myself then, right, try and get yourself in good condition. And because my brother always used to say, you're not fit enough. And he was the older brother, and I say, I am fit enough. And
that's astonishing in hindsight, Nathan, though, because this is after the performance in Belgrade, remember, where he cleared a ball off a line, more or less, with a late last-ditch tackle, scored the penalty. Rovers getting into Europe, obviously part of a very good team. And I know Johnny Glynn was trying to get you to Merivale. And
Merivale, that was the only other offer.
And Johnny Glynn brought, like, Patrick Hoban and Gaffney and the Mayo keeper.
John Mountney.
And the young Mayo keeper is now in England. At
O'Malley.
O'Malley, yeah.
And he could have brought Stephen O'Donnell. You've got to give him a lot of credit. It just amazes me that managers weren't...
It doesn't amaze me.
I just can't see it. Even throughout all your League of Ireland career, you'd been one of the dominant midfielders without a shadow of a doubt, even before Dundalk.
Yeah, well...
Particularly under Finn and
that. But those managers at those clubs have been at you about your fitness.
Yeah, I remember going to Michael O'Neill. I went to Michael O'Neill one time and I said, why aren't I playing or whatever? And he goes, I haven't got any issue with your ability. It's this I've got an issue with. And he pinched my stomach. And then that was basically the end of the conversation.
Wow. How did you react?
I just took it, but Like, yeah, but that shows you. No, it was never.
Like, did you take it, I'm going to prove him wrong, I'm getting in the gym, or just screw him?
Yeah, kind of. That would have been my mentality. Like, I'm fit enough, but... and then I had a bit of a chat to him with me. I just smelled the coffee beans and, like, had a chat with myself and said, you're obviously not. And then I got myself in shape. And, like everyone, we had a great culture. Then when Dundalk, we came second the first year, people kind of forget, which was an unbelievable achievement considering... Stephen just signed the whole sort of squad that weren't wanted by anyone else because no one was going up there to get rich. It was just basically sort of castaways, and we came second the first year, and then the rest is sort of history.
Where did that culture come from then? Because so you get into the best shape of your life, and even up until the recent signings, like he's taken, I don't want to say a lot of rogues, but he's brought
a lot of journeymen at that time. Like there were journeymen.
A lot of journeymen, yeah. But even someone like Patrick McElhaney, I remember when he signed, and I might even been chatting to you about it, and you were kind of, you know, everyone knew he had the talent, but there were questions again, probably about his fitness, his mentality, that I remember you saying that you felt once he got into the Dundalk crew, actually, it was a sort of no excuses culture there, that if he bought into the gym ethic, that everything, they'd get him on the right track, and it's sort of proven to be the case.
Yeah, definitely. It just sort of happened. Everything, he signed everyone that kind of had a point to prove, and he sort of drilled that home, that no one wanted you, kind of a bit, and everyone kind of had a chip on their shoulder, and... you know, I remember Richie Towell came in pre-season in great condition, and we done a bleep test or whatever, and he sort of blew the whole thing up. And then I don't think anyone kind of then wanted to be left behind. And we had good young; they were all young. Most of them were young, and that's where Stephen's brilliant with the young players and that. And it kind of just built from there, and we got an advantage. We could see that we could sort of get an advantage with strength and conditioning wise. Because no one was taking.
You were the forerunners of that, and I don't know if you got it. Apart from Gaelic Games, had become very much down that road at that stage. Look at the hurlers now compared to 10 years ago. But Dundalk were 100% the first in Ireland, and all of a sudden other clubs were just—they looked like men against boys.
Yeah, that's the way it was.
And in Europe as well, like even in Europe, you were.
Well, yeah, we could stay going 90 minutes, no problem. Usually, when you'd see an Irish team in Europe, the last 20-25 was just set up camp on the edge of the 18-yard box, you know. Because
do you remember Kilduff's goal in Holland? like he was marking a 6 foot. Seven striker, like, and he out-muscled him. Yeah. And this is in the injury time or the 88 minute or whatever. And I was that is insane.
But we could see we got an advantage.
we wouldn't mention that.
What happened there?
Rush of blood. But we did get an advantage, as you said, and it was clear for everyone to see. And then you'd be talking to players, opposition players, and some of them would be saying, the size of some of your lads and that sort of stuff. And you know, when you're lining up against a team in a tunnel and they're looking over and saying, these lads are animals or whatever, you know, has a big advantage. Now, other teams are catching up now, you know, it's got far more professional, but no one was taking it seriously. Like, the GAA players would have lost and found us, the League of Ireland players, 6-7 years ago, whereas now you'd like to think, you know, looking at our lads doing pre-season there today, that... you know, you can see 20 athletes out there where it wouldn't have been like that before.
Yeah, that's interesting. The style of football then with Dundalk, like for a good chunk of the last 5-6 years, very attractive, very good to watch, always quite attacking, always very much on the front foot. It seems as though that's very much Stephen Kenny's philosophy. Your relationship with him over the last 5-6 years, how important a figure has he been to you becoming, I think, probably... most people say the league's best midfielder of the last half decade.
Yeah, me and Stephen, like, great relationship. Like, it wouldn't have been, how would you put it, do you know, like, we'd have our differences as well, but it would be sort of respectfully. So, you know, I'd voice my opinion in obviously a respectful manner, and like we'd have a constructive conversation or whatever. So it was great, but Stephen would never send a team out to play for a draw. He'd never send a team out just to sit in, you know, and catch people. And he always believed, he always gave us belief to believe in ourselves and have a go at it. No matter who we played, every European game we played, we were there to win and we were there to express ourselves, and he'd fill the team with confidence. And, you know, a lot of managers do that during the week, and you do your possession games and that in training and all that passing, great. But then the first time maybe it breaks down in the game and, you know, it's launch it down the channels, launch it forward. But he was very brave like that. He always stuck to his beliefs and would never criticise a player trying to express himself if he gave the ball away, which... you know, attacking players are going to do. They're going to get, you know, not everything's going to work, but he'd never change tack or that. It would always be, or like, go again next time. And you'd have your attacking players going out with their chest puffed out, you know, and when attacking players and that, when everyone's playing with confidence is the biggest thing in football. When you have it, you can look a really good player, and when you don't, you can look very, very average. So he just had players playing with confidence and, I suppose, no fear, and just enjoying the occasions rather than going out sort of with a bit of trepidation.
I remember on that in Warsaw when they lost 2-0 in the first leg. This was to get to the Champions League proper, and they were so tantalisingly close. But I think the first leg, the Dundalk players went to the Aviva Stadium that night, and it was like 30,000 at the game, and it was a big occasion for a League of Ireland player, and you could kind of sense that they were a little bit nervous. And in fairness to Stephen, I think he took the game, the bull by the horns, and he got the ball and he made them feel that they were at home at that level. But when they lost that game 2-0, I went over to Warsaw obviously expecting this could be an absolute hockeying. And the day before, Stephen Kenny he brought all the Irish journalists to a press conference, and he said, yeah, we're going to go for this because we kind of have to, and we're going to play this and that. And I was looking at this could be, and I remember saying to Daniel McDonald, like, this could be an absolute tanking. They lost 1-0, and with 20 minutes to go, they had 11 men against 10.
We won 1-0.
And with 20 minutes to go, they had an extra man, and it was that close. So if they get to extra time, they have a man over. And they didn't quite have the squad depth at that time.
And it was that late goal at home and the Aviva.
And a penalty that shouldn't have been. But Kenny's belief absolutely astounded me at that time.
So obviously when he got the new gig, and even around the time of whether it was going to be Mick McCarthy or Stephen Kenny, a lot of the debate was that Mick McCarthy would get the instant respect of the players because of what he's achieved throughout English football, and maybe it may take Stephen Kenny more time. Now that he has this, and he has it in 2020, maybe it's impossible to know. What is it about him, you think, that, and I presume you hope and expect it will be a success for him with Ireland, but he's going into a dressing room with a lot of players who won't have heard of him, who won't fully understand his achievements. How does he go about getting the trust of those players?
I suppose it's like anything. You sort of earn the respect by when you come in and you show your knowledge or whatever. And he's a great man manager, you know. And you got to remember, there's the biggest characters probably in that squad are kind of ex League of Ireland players. You have the captain, Shamey Coleman, and James McLean's obviously a big personality in that squad and that. So he'll have their instant respect, and I assume that would go a long way towards the rest of the squad. But as I said, he makes players believe, you know, he builds them up with confidence, and I can assure you, if when he's manager of Ireland, Ireland will be going out to win games and with full belief in themselves to go and beat it, no matter who, any other nation, no matter who they're up against, you know, which is probably something
we haven't had,
maybe.
Probably. Jesus.
So, what's next? You're going to stick with Dundalk?
Yeah, stay, sort of, have joining the Dundalks, the sort of coaching staff and that. And
is that a full-time position?
Yeah. So
that's brilliant in itself. So your job is as away scout?
Yeah, opposition kind of analysis. So whoever we're playing next week, I'll be at their game, you know, the week before, and sort of helping out in the recruitment side of things as well, and, you know, whatever the coaching side of it, whatever.
That dynamic's going to be interesting.
Whatever they need me to do on that front. So, you know, really looking forward to it, and I'm excited now. I'm most excited been in a while, I think.
That dynamic will be interesting, that you'll be kind of encouraging them about a certain player, or you think he's might be worth looking
at. Yeah, obviously I'm not.
And you've Vinnie Perth coming in, who's like so new to his role as well.
Yeah, I'm not going to be like, it's going to be a team effort, I suppose. I'm going to be looking at players and then maybe recommended players or whatever, and players being sent to me to have a look at, and then I'll give my opinion, and then obviously the rest of the coaching staff, John Gill, Rory Higgins, and eventually Vinnie Perth, who, like, they'll have the final say, you know.
How do you think Vinnie will get on?
I think he'll do well. You know,
he's his boss.
He can say he won't do well, but no matter what, like, it is, he is taking over from Stephen Kenny, and it's like kind of Alex Ferguson. It's not easy.
Yeah, he's the full respect of the players, and as well, in the sense, it's a great dressing room, in the sense we've just touched on it, it will drive itself, you know, like all good dressing rooms do. I'm sure, it says the Dublin Gaelic football team, I'm sure Jim Gavin kind of just has to oversee it. I'm sure there's the players inside the dressing room kind of, it runs its own ship, and Vinny will be overseeing the dressing room. But as I said, he has the full respect of the players. You know, he's very enthusiastic, great opportunity for him. And, you know, I'm sure we'll all do well. We're all kind of new to our roles, but it's exciting times. And, you know, it's a big opportunity for us all.
Even the language must be hard there, where you're like, oh, hang on, I'm not actually in the dress. I'm coaching now. I'm not part of that dressing room. It's like, you have to think.
Have you had to leave the players' WhatsApp group?
Yeah, I'll have to leave that, yeah. It's, my relationship will still be pretty. I don't see my relationship changing much with the players, in the sense, you know, it'll stay the same in that regard. And you know, it'll be interesting. It's something that we're all looking forward to. And as I said, I really can't wait to get going. They're in the last week or so in pre-season. So. You know, I think it's been a great few days. They've had a great few days, and the players are looking enthusiastic and raring to go. And it's a good opportunity for them as well to show what they can do as well. So, you know, it's all systems going. Really looking forward to it.
Good stuff. You sound pretty content with your decision anyways.
Yeah, happy.
Good man. No regrets. Thanks a lot for coming in. Best of luck with everything.
Lovely. Thank you.
All right, quick break.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.